This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega.
Almost every woman in her 40s will have weight problems.
I said, well, I'm 49. She says, oh my God, can't you die from 49?
Daddy and I are making some changes so that we can be happier and healthier.
Great.
My crime is not dying.
I'm going to share with you the three deadly mistakes men over 40 are making when trying to lose weight and get fit.
Because I'm not feeling good. Every visit, I'm slightly older and slightly more decrepit. It's awful.
Keep your voice down. You're scaring the thinner customers.
The juggle is real. That's been a theme on our show this week as we've been talking about life in your 40s, and we're calling our series The Juggle. So far, we've had some real talk about money and career in this very unique phase of life. But today, we're turning to health changes and challenges associated with our 40s. And here's what our listeners, you, had to say about that.
I didn't have time or energy or the psychic bandwidth to deal with being perimenopausal. And while I wouldn't recommend wrecking the rest of your life as a coping strategy, it sure worked for me.
I encountered probably what's fairly normal aches and pains and stiffness. Had heard yoga was a great way to mitigate some of those aging issues.
My husband and I each noticed a marked decline in our night vision as we each turned 40. That was an unwelcome surprise.
Thanks to all of you who shared your stories with us. I want you to know we hear you, and we're going to take some time today to talk about all of these changes. With me is Derek Griffith, professor of medicine, health, and society, and he's also the director of Vanderbilt Center for Research on Men's Health. He's edited and contributed to a new handbook called Men's Health Equity. Derek, glad to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And here in studio in New York City is Dr. Alexandra Sachs, a reproductive psychiatrist and host of the podcast Motherhood Sessions. Welcome back to the show, Alexandra.
Thanks for having me.
So, Derek, let's start with you. How would you characterize, Derek, the major physical changes that begin to happen at this stage of life for men?
Well, I think the biggest thing is really thinking about the changes that occur as it relates to metabolism and testosterone levels. Testosterone levels naturally tend to decline as we age, and your metabolism tends to slow. And so all of those things are a recipe for weight not disappearing as much as we'd like. We also tend to be less active sometimes as we move into these roles and responsibilities.
What about the mental health challenges that men face in this decade, Derek?
So a lot of it speaks to what some of your callers mentioned already, which is kind of this crisis of, you know, figuring out how you're going to juggle stress, money, career, and these life changes. And so a lot of it's shifting from a phase of your life where you're basically been focused on yourself for the majority of your time to now focusing on family, work, and those kinds of things that are really about the relationships you have and the legacy that you're leaving. And so the ways that we kind of try to juggle those kind of stressors are really difficult for us and tend to move us to prioritizing health a lot less and prioritizing these kind of roles and responsibilities a lot more.
Alexandra, I want to turn to you because women also face unique physical challenges. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, sure. So many of them overlap with what Derek was discussing, changes in metabolism, sleep, needing more sleep, like one of your callers mentioned. And then, of course, the biggest issue and a factor that mediates a lot of these physical changes is the change in your estrogen levels that happens around perimenopause and menopause.
And it's something we definitely want to talk about, but we'll get to that in a minute. Let's talk about the psychological changes that women experience in their 40s. Are they different than what we heard Derek say for men?
Well, I think I would begin with what Derek said in terms of taking care of others. Of course, we see that men and women do this and at the neglect of their own self-care, right? But we still do see in our country an unequal distribution in caretaking, both for young children and for parents, aging parents. This burden disproportionately falls on women. And so because in our country, we don't have sorts of social support that we may see in other countries that provide subsidized childcare, that provide mandated maternal leave that is paid, and also leave to take care of older parents, it's much harder for women to find time to take care of themselves because they're so burdened by taking care of others.
I mentioned we were going to go back to menopause and perimenopause, Alexandra. So this is the big thing, right? We all hear about menopause, right? The change of life. But rarely, or at least more frequently now, we're talking about perimenopause, which is, from my understanding, could last 6 months to years.
Absolutely.
What is this? Why don't we know more about it? And how does it impact women?
Yeah, so it's so important that we're talking about this because perimenopause is probably the time that is more physically and emotionally uncomfortable for women than even after menopause. So menopause is your last menstrual period. The 12 months after your last menstrual period defines when you've reached menopause. But perimenopause is the decade that may precede that. It may be 2 to 8 years. And what we really know about how hormones impact the body and the brain is that it's the shifting in the levels that can be most disrupted, especially for the brain and mood. So once the estrogen levels stabilize in menopause as being lower, it can actually be less disruptive for the body than that fluctuation of irregular periods, which is what the perimenopausal period is like. In perimenopause, it's also when you're experiencing the vasomotor symptoms.
And what does that mean?
So those are the hot flashes and night sweats. That leads to the insomnia, the sleep deprivation, which is so at the root of so many of the body and mind stressors that women feel in their 40s. When you can't sleep, you just can't be your best. You just can't think straight, and you certainly are going to be more irritable. So those hot flashes and night sweats are really worse in the perimenopause.
And of course, we know that we're talking in very big swaths here, men and women. I want to dig a little deeper, Derek. Are there racial disparities in what we're seeing, particularly when it comes to the health of Black men versus white men, for example?
We tend to see a lot of, for Black men, for example, a lot of early stage heart disease, diabetes and so forth, for Black and Latino men, for example. Obesity rates tend to be the highest in those two groups, Black and Latino men, and among men. Obesity rates generally are higher in women, but they tend to be highest in middle-aged men. And we so are surprised by that often because people are expecting, you know, you to get your health to decline as you age, but we find that actually men in their middle age years are actually struggling the most with a lot of these health challenges and tend to have, that's kind of what also defines what we call premature mortality, which is dying before the age of 70.
Derek, let's turn to a moment for something I think would pique quite a couple of ears. Let's talk about sex. How does sex change in your 40s for a man?
Ooh. Quite a loaded question.
Well, let's put it, how does your sexual health change when you're a man? How about that?
Well, I think it speaks to some of the things we've been discussing earlier. So with some of the changes that we're talking about, you know, if we're talking about male relationships with one another or male-female partnerships and so forth, I mean, there are all these things that we were just talking about from the male menopause to perimenopause and menopause in women that men may not be as attentive to when it comes to their sex lives. And so for men to even just recognize that the declines in libido, the declines and the increase potentially in depression, their potentially lack of interest. There can be physiological changes that are responsible for that. There can be the stress-related changes going on in their lives that may be responsible for that. So they can cause other kinds of stressors in their relationships and tensions in their relationships.
Alexandra, we talked a little bit about some of the physical changes, but for women in their 40s who may be perimenopausal, maybe heading into menopause, what are the changes that they experience when it comes to sex?
Yeah, sure. So because of decreased estrogen and decreased blood flow to the genitals, there can be vaginal dryness and thinning of the tissue, and that can make sex painful, so leading to physical discomfort. But the other physical things that may decrease your desire to have sex include the hot flashes, the sleep deprivation, the weight gain, and the depression that you may be experiencing. Also, issues with partnership as well and social stress, having to wake up in the middle of the night to take care of a child and issues like that. One thing that I would say, though, that's kind of interesting is that while we do ask women more about their emotional lives, and women are seen to report depression at a higher rate, I think that we talk to women less about sexual dysfunction. And we really see a disparity of that in terms of looking into research and treatment and even diagnosis of female sexual dysfunction in perimenopause and above.
I want to shift to a minute to, again, some of our listeners or people who are on Twitter were tweeting at us, and some of the things things that they, my question to them was, how are you coping, right? That was the real central question. And Derek, this is to both you and Alexandra. And some of the things that came up, some of them were probably tongue-in-cheek, were weed, wine, and therapy. So let's break those down.
Okay, those are very different.
Exactly.
But they were,
and meditation. I'm going to add that in. So Derek, you got that weed, wine, therapy, meditation. Alexandra, yeah. Weed, wine, therapy, meditation. Sure. Is this a good cocktail? No pun intended. Should people be considering their consumption of weed and wine and increasing the therapy or not? I mean, these all seem really interesting.
I mean, I think one of the things that we realize is that people do what works for them. So you've learned over time, it's not an accident what people are choosing to cope with stress. And that the point I want to get to is that there are important connections between the leading cause of death within this particular age group and the types of ways that people are coping with stress. But you kind of develop a tendency to do things that work for you. And over time, if eating that piece of cake or having that glass of wine or that bottle of wine works for you, that's probably what you're going to continue to go back to until it doesn't work anymore.
We had one listener say bourbon and chocolate, which I can't argue with most of the time. Let's talk about therapy here, because therapy was a surprise for me that it came up. And I feel like, Alexandra, women, I think, are generally, I guess, encouraged to go to therapy. We talk about our emotions. It's okay. Is there something that, are you noticing more women doing this? Is this more of an open conversation about depression and therapy and seeking that kind of help at this age?
Well, listen, I'm so glad that you did a show recently on parity for mental health care, because we really don't have great access to talk therapy. I also think that we in our health system are not focused on prevention enough. So we don't do enough education for people before this age about exercise, about nutrition, about stress management, and about for primary care physicians to have the time to ask people, how are you doing? How are you feeling emotionally, right? If people don't have access to a mental health care provider, then those questions should be coming from their primary care physician, or for women in their reproductive years and perimenopause, from their OBGYN, who may be the only clinician they're seeing all year. So we need to increase emotional literacy in our clinicians as well and change the system to give doctors more time to talk to people about their feelings.
Derek, I want to ask you, because men, I guess, and again, we're speaking in generalizations here, traditionally have not been as open to therapy, at least publicly. But anecdotally, I can tell you that I know a lot of men in their 40s who said, you know what? I'm going to try this out. I'm going to go to therapy. And it's been life-changing for them. Are you seeing more men open to doing that?
I am. I think just to tie some of these parts of the conversation together, I think we've overvalued in particularly the healthcare system, men's sexual functioning, and undervalued their mental health and their emotional experiences. So I think we've done exactly the opposite for women. But I think it's got to be something where they find utility in it. I think what's different fundamentally about the ways that men tend to approach their health and their bodies and particularly their mental health is they see it as much more instrumental. Is what does this mean for me? Can I do something differently when I leave here today? Can I do something differently as it relates to going to work, as it relates to my sexual functioning, as it relates to my ability to have energy to do things with my partner, with my kids, in my community? We don't really value men's mental health. We don't really, you know, often it's stigmatized in and of itself. If men go into the doctor's office and say that they, you know, are experiencing some kinds of depression and so forth, it's not uncommon for those things to be dismissed. There's this interesting pattern that we're seeing with how to deal with men and mental health that we're really needing and showing that, you know, even with the rise in younger kids and suicide and so forth, and young Black males in particular, that we're seeing this real need to pay more attention to men's mental health, and they are seeking more. It's just that I don't know that the system is always prepared for men to actually go into care.
So we're on the end of the segment now. We've definitely gone into a very, very robust conversation. I do want to end on a different note. I'm wondering, as someone who's in her 40s, there are some good things about this decade. It's not all doom and gloom. I'm going to ask both of you, is there any joy that we can derive in health, in our bodies, in our mental state, in our 40s? Alexandra.
Absolutely. So on my podcast, Motherhood Sessions, I've been talking to a lot of women who are coming out of the childbirth years, but struggling, but also finding themselves. And in a way, you know, having a rebirth of their own identity, which can be the flip side of the end of your fertility. So this opportunity to discover yourself. There's a woman I talked to who was going back to school, and we talked about how she decided actually not to pursue having a second child in her 40s, and really kind of the opportunity to spend more time working on herself and appreciating, you know, as I'm seeing some doors close, maybe in my biological clock, I'm realizing this is my life. This is my time to live for me. And I think that's a beautiful opportunity for people.
Derek, what about you?
Yeah, I think what Alexander points out is that both men and women define health as broader than just their physical and mental health symptoms. It really has to do with how their relationships change and how they relate to one another and how they relate to things that are fundamentally more important to them. So I think it's an important sort of phase of life where you're transitioning from being a young adult and child and so forth to really figuring out who you are and how you're going to operate going forward and make some really important changes that are, you know, for better or worse, are going to really drive the rest of your life.
Derek Griffith is a professor of medicine and health at Vanderbilt University and director of Vanderbilt's Center for Research on Men's Health, and he edited and contributed to a new handbook called Men's Health Equity. And Dr. Alexandra Sachs is a reproductive psychiatrist and host of the podcast Motherhood Sessions. Thanks so much to you both.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And remember, you can find all of our coverage about life in your 40s at thetakeaway.org/thejuggle.